This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. It's now 9:35 a.m. You're with me, Melissa Idris, and also Ibrahim Sani. It's time now for the show where we speak to members of the press, pressing matters. This week we have P. Gunasegaram, CEO and founding editor of Kini Biz, to get behind the recent headlines. Of course, two stories that we're going to be looking closely today. The first, MAS's or Malaysia Airlines check-in baggage kerfuffle and what this means for their turnaround plan. Also, the 1MDB price confusion over that stake sale to China's CRC of Bandar Malaysia. So we'll walk through exactly what happened there. So Guna, let's start by perhaps giving some background, setting the scene for those who may have missed the baggage kerfuffle with MAS.
Okay, I think it's terribly unfortunate that this comes at a time when Malaysia Airlines is in the middle of a recovery program, that they have this baggage problem. Essentially, you know, I mean, they have got themselves into an international press situation which they can ill afford at this point of time, announcing that flights to Amsterdam and Paris, they will take the passengers there, but not their checked-in baggage, which will arrive by a later flight. So the reason that was given for this is basically what they said first was, the explanation was rather tenuous. Headwinds and a longer route in the interest of safety, you know. And this part about what exactly involved safely was not properly explained, you know. So people had to guess whether it was safety from what point of view. Were they taking a longer route because they didn't want to overfly sensitive areas? Or is it because of other factors, you know? So, but whatever it is, it was a dubious first for Malaysia Airlines, where you fly your passengers and the checked-in baggage does not arrive. You know, so essentially you are putting the hand baggage. You don't even increase the hand carry-on luggage. It's 7 kilos for economy and 14 kilos for business. So it's a rather unsatisfactory state of affairs. And even travel writers were saying we're not going to take an airline which doesn't bring our baggage along with us. You know?
Okay. So, I spoke to Mohsin Aziz, aviation analyst at Maybank Investment Bank, because when we first heard this news, we were all really puzzled. What is going on here?
Yeah.
So we said, okay, let's call up an aviation analyst. Mohsin's been covering MAS for many years now to find out exactly what he thought had happened. Here he is.
First and foremost, it started from Eurocontrol, whereby they changed the normal route for flights from Asia heading towards west, and this new route is actually much further. The reason behind this is to avoid turbulent air, storm systems. So the intention is good, but what it does is the flight from Kuala Lumpur to Amsterdam and Paris is almost 2 hours longer than normal. And in particular for Malaysia Airlines, this is a problem because they use a very old 777-200 aircraft. And because of the age of the aircraft, the flight range capability is probably at about 14 hours max. So that's where the problem lies.
That was Mohsin Aziz, aviation analyst at Maybank Investment Bank. Guna, what do you think? I mean, the way Mohsin explained it was quite clear.
Yes, that's clear, but that was not what came out from their press releases. I think we also sent them questions, you know, from Kini Biz to Malaysia Airlines, and this was not the exact answer that we obtained. So the communication in this instance was bad as well. And it looked like it affected A380 aircraft as well, because coincidentally I was on a flight from KL to London, and the pilot actually announced that they were taking a different route which will be 2 hours longer. So it just did not affect only the 777s, but the A380s as well. So these kind of things have not been properly explained by Malaysia Airlines. And considering that it is the only airline which was facing this kind of a problem, it came under a lot of focus. So the necessity for a very clear and unambiguous explanation was very important, you know? But and this was not done by them.
I think the biggest question right now is that why was the marketing team failing in their job to actually put Malaysia Airlines in a better light or actually communicate this more efficiently? We know that safety is our primary concern. No Malaysian wants to see another crisis fiasco from Malaysia Airlines. But why can't they just communicate properly?
But do you feel that because of the disasters that Malaysia Airlines has faced, we as consumers are skeptical? Because they said this is for your safety. Shouldn't we as passengers accept, okay, the airline is changing it because of safety considerations? We should then just accept. I mean, why would they want to jeopardize safety considerations?
If that's the case, I have this question to ask. How come they reversed the decision in 24 hours, or was it 48 hours? You know, and it's all back to normal now, you know, if it was a safety consideration. So obviously there was some other solution there. Or have the winds disappeared?
Yeah.
Taken the wind out of them, yeah. Yes.
So I mean, these are the kind of questions that the public has, and you need to answer these questions if you have an answer, you know?
Mm. Do you think that this was merely, a failure in proper communication? I have to admit, Gunnar, when I first heard about this, I had not read the press release. I heard it on social media, and there were so many ambiguous details as to what safety meant, why were they the only airline to do this? So was this a failure in communication, purely?
Definitely it was. I mean, if, as Mohsin says, this is because of the age of the planes and that it doesn't affect other newer 777s, presumably, then there is something that they should say, you know. And perhaps there could have been other things which could have been done. Maybe you take out the cargo loads and send it by another flight, because that is not as sensitive. Eh?
Right.
So, and keep the luggage of the passengers there. Eh? So there might have been other solutions. So, and this also marks a major, Muller's first major four-part Malaysia Airlines since he became CEO. And it comes at a very bad time. And, for travel writers to say, we're not going to take this airline anymore. I mean, would you take an airline which doesn't take your baggage with you?
Especially not to Europe, which is in brutal winter at the
moment,
right?
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely.
Yeah, but is it these are some of the things which is, the problems facing Malaysia Airlines. So the other thing is, I mean, it has among the lowest yields in the industry, Malaysia Airlines, yield is basically a combined reflection of how much the planes are filled and how much they charge in fares relative to other airlines. It is also an established fact that Malaysia Airlines has among the lowest, the lowest yields among comparable airlines, while its cost relative to distance flown is among the lowest.
Got it.
So it is not, Malaysia Airlines is not necessarily as widely believed, suffering from a cost overrun as such.
Yeah.
So if they can get their yields up, that airline, the airline will be in a much better position than it is at the moment.
Is the problem on price setting? Is that the issue right now?
Yes. Essentially, much of it seems to be over the issue of price setting. So, I mean, I think, say, for instance, if you take the KL to London sector, it is, I think, maybe one of two airlines which fly direct to UK. The other one could be British Airways. I can't be sure of that at the moment. But that is something that you can actually market and get a price advantage for. Yeah? But not when you are making these kind of mistakes in terms of your coverage.
Right.
You know, and as far as I can recall, it is still a five-star airline under Skytrax rating. And if you go on like this, you are in danger of losing this rating. And that will add to your problems and woes as there is. So I think sometimes you can go too much in terms of cost cutting to the detriment of the airline itself. And if you look at the figures, Malaysia Airlines' problem is more of yield rather than of cost.
Should
be clear.
Well, Christoph Mueller, I mean, after everything has happened with this baggage check-in kerfuffle, he wrote a New Year's letter to his employees, trying to say, look, new year, new beginning for Malaysia Airlines. He's trying to get them on board with the transformation process. But, I mean, this is a company that really struggled last year. They lost a lot of their staff. Yep. They're still trying to replace some of their staff. And also they cut a lot of routes and they're retiring certain planes, right?
As well as employment. A lot of people lost their jobs. I think it is important for them to show in their quarterly reports, where the improvement is coming from. The last quarterly report gave hardly anything in terms of figures. You know, so although it is now has been taken private by Khazanah National, but as a national airline into which a lot of taxpayers' money have been used, have been put in something like $17 billion over the last 10 to 15 years. So it has a responsibility to disclose enough figures to the public so we know that there is actually an improvement.
What will you be watching for, Gunnar, if they were to release this?
I would look at yields, you know, whether the yields are improving or not. You know, I mean, I do not know about what is the state of hedging as far as airline fuel is concerned.
Got it.
But if they are not very, if they have not hedged very much, then they should benefit fully from the drop in the oil price,
yeah.
You know, and that alone can turn you know, airline profits around. And I think Mohsin had a report recently which I managed to glance at, where he is coming up with a lot of buys for airlines across the world.
Yes.
Because of this improvement in the cost structure for the airlines as a result of the falling oil prices. You know?
Okay.
So, well, I mean, we want to know why Malaysia Airlines turns around when it turns around. Is it because of oil price increases or is it because of real improvement in the airline itself?
So I have a question. So if it isn't yields, is that a sustainable turnaround then?
Yes. So that is the question to ask. You know, I mean, like, if it is because of a mere price of the oil price drop, I mean, that's not enough for Malaysia Airlines, you know.
Yeah.
You should also be improving your yields as you go forward.
I have a sense that all Malaysian wants to fall behind Malaysia Airlines and rally them to succeed. However, I think a lot has to be done in this sense.
I'm concerned that consumers are disenchanted. And,
yeah.
You know, once you lose that trust and that loyalty, it's really going to be hard for Malaysia Airlines to
yes.
win it back.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
incidents like this
yes.
are
yeah,
not
I know.
Going to help.
You know,
for sure.
Unnecessary. You know, mm-hmm.
Fly the passengers and not the baggage.
Yeah,
come
yeah,
on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, it's now 9:47 a.m. And now, remember, not too long ago, we spoke of the 1MDB price confusion over the Bandar Malaysia stake sale to China's CREC. Well, today, Gunnar's here to help us peel back the layers, explore what really happened there.
All right. When 1MDB announced the deal, I think it was last week, the figure bandied about was $7.41 billion. For a 60% stake in Bandar Malaysia. I mean, this is the former Air Force base, which will be converted into housing development. And 40% would be taken by a company associated with the China Railway Group Limited, which is Hong Kong, which is the Hong Kong listed parent of the company, which is going to take a stake in Bandar Malaysia. Now, the China Railway Group told the Hong Kong Stock Exchange, however, that the consortium is paying $5.28 billion for the deal. So that's a difference of over $2 billion. So the question that arises is who's correct? You know? So the tentative answer might be, although we are still not very certain about it until more is revealed, is that both are correct, if that's possible. So how is that so? No, I mean, what 1MDB's figures includes the liabilities which are associated with the deal. Now. So it starts from the point of the valuation of the land. The Bandar Malaysia land is valued at over $12 billion, and then a 60% stake of that is valued at $7.41 billion. You know, and it includes also the liabilities associated with that piece of land. Whereas in the case of China Railway, they're coming from the point where they strip off the liabilities associated with the land and say that this is the net is worth $5.28 billion.
Right.
So that apparently accounts for the discrepancy in both the figures.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it was just basically a report, the way they valued it was just a reporting issue. But, I mean, was that not apparent from the get-go, Gunnar?
It wasn't, because I think 1MDB just used the figure of 12 over billion valuation for the entire Bandar Malaysia land, you know. But in this case here, I think they did not include the liabilities associated with it. So in presumably the 5.28 billion strips out the liabilities associated with the land.
Okay.
No?
Okay. As a
but I'm not sure that whether that is that exactly works out as it is, but that is the explanation
that's
1MDB has
said,
given,
right? Yeah.
for the discrepancy in the whole thing.
My biggest question is, if it is indeed a manipulation of how you represent that transaction to the media, and it turns out that, you know, one party or both parties actually outright lied.
Well,
what is the implication?
I don't know whether it was nefarious. So that's my question, Gunnar. Your sense from reading this this issue from both sides, was there nefarious intent, or was this simply a question of misreporting, or, you know, not valuing it at the same way?
I think I would tend to think at this stage, although I do not have enough info to actually make the proper conclusion, that it is basically, looking at it from different points of view.
Yeah.
Right,
know?
Right. So was this a communication breakdown? Is this a miscommunication, perhaps?
Yeah, perhaps it is a miscommunication. So as far as 1MDB is concerned, that land is worth 12 over billion. You know? So when you sell it, then that is the amount of money that accrues to 1MDB.
Right.
You know? So which means whatever liability has to be extinguished comes within the deal itself, now, you know, within the 12.55 billion.
I think this is where companies' reputations come into play when they have, you know, mistakes, miscommunications like this. For instance, with Malaysia Airlines, when they use the word "for your security,"
yeah,
or "for safety,"
yeah, scary,
people immediately jump back and think about past history, mm-hmm, with MH16. MH17, excuse me.
Okay. Oh,
and yeah, sorry, my bad. And then with 1MDB, when there's the figure is different, people immediately jump to the negative.
Yeah. What is more important, I think, is to answer the question of whether there is a hole in 1MDB or not. You know, so in this case here, if they can cover all their liabilities by the sale of assets, does it mean that there is no hole in 1MDB? I would say positively that is not the case, though. Because I mean, in this case here, you're talking about the land, you know, which was obtained cheaply from the government, you know, for about several hundred million, you know, and now that this is being palmed up at over 12 over billion, all right? So much of the debt that 1MDB took, you know, they have 42 plus billion in liabilities, is not associated with this piece of land. So what you're doing is you are using an asset, you're selling it off, and you're settling a debt somewhere else, you know? So which means there could very well still be a hole in 1MDB somewhere else. So I think that I can clearly say is not a question of no. It does not indicate that there is no hole. What you're doing is you're using your good assets to cover up your what could be a liability situation elsewhere.
Well, there you go. That's Kini Biz's explanation of what happened with the price confusion over 1MDB's Banda Malaysia stake sale. Unfortunately, Gunnar, we've run out of time. You've been listening to Pressing Matters with P. Gunnar Segaram, CEO and founding editor of Kini Biz. Thanks so much for being on the show this week.
Welcome.
Ibrahim Sani and Melissa Idris now signing off for the morning run. Here's Lenny Kravitz with It Ain't Over Till It's Over to take you till the 10 o'clock news on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.